recording on here. So, first of all, I thought maybe you guys could give us a little update. Leo was at the all hands meeting with us a week or so ago, and I don't know if you followed up with him on anything from that, if you have any questions or anything.
In fact, not yet. We were chatting on it just now because, you know, I came back from Ethiopia and I had a lot of things to catch up and meeting. So we did not have time to sit down to talk about it yet. Is there any important points you wanted to highlight from that meeting?
Well, Leo told us that he gave a little report from your side and said that Marie-Angelique should be joining
next week at the most, at the closest, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So that's great. And any other news from your end?
Let me think about it. So Leo has been progressing on several crops. He may be talking about it, I think.
Yes, we are. I think I told last time I told you about the cowpea trade dictionary that now a discussion on several points on how to deal with some terms has been open to a community. So the ball is in there on their side and we are waiting for their feedback. No news from the rice curator. I've been working on the pigeon pea crop dictionary because with the BMS, at the BMS, I think it must have been, anyway, I don't know. But there was training about the BMS with cowpea breeders and they gave feedbacks and raised the need to have more traits. So I've revised 12 extra traits for the pigeon pea trait dictionaries.
So Leo, when you make those revisions, are those reflected in the file on the Cropontology website now or no?
Everything is done offline because first I work with Julian Petragalia, who is in Mexico, in CIMIT, and he's he dealt with the standards on the CIMIT side.
On the BMS.
On the BMS side.
He's a technical officer, support technical officer for the breeding management system.
Okay, so he was at the training session and he reported to me what had been said. So we put it into the trade dictionary, which did some revision. And now we are submitting the revisions to the curator of the Pigeon Pea, of Pigeon Pea, who is
Prasad.
And after he agrees on the modifications, we upload the trade dictionary. So it's quite a long process, which is done offline by via emailing and communication.
Yeah, and that's mostly done as spreadsheets, correct? The trait dictionary. You use Excel, do you?
Yes, we do.
Yeah. Well, that seems to be working. And the Pigeon Pea curators are in Ikrisat? Are they?
Prasad. You met him in the workshop.
Sure. Well, that sounds good. Pankaj, did you have any questions? I can unmute you. Pankaj, do you have any questions?
No, I'm fine. I'm just listening right now.
Yeah, okay.
So this is about...
I'll talk in the end about the email that you sent today to Adra.
To Inra, okay. So, yeah, so I just wanted... So this was for the curation of the trade dictionaries as per Leo's work plan. So next week we'll be in CIMIT to work further on the trade dictionaries. We will be discussing also the synchronization with the breeding management system. So we'll have some technical discussion around that. So we will spend a week there, in fact, trying to clean all that. So normally after that week, we should have a proposition of better trade dictionaries for validation by the centers. And so it's going on. So all the props are on the list.
So will that visit be a part of the Sierra or the crop Plantium?
It should be normally those crops are listed, but it's not in the priority group for now. But
it's, no, I believe if it is wheat, wheat is a priority.
Yeah, wheat, we'll be discussing wheat, maize, all the 12 dictionaries that Leo has progressed on. Mm-hmm. So this is the idea. What else? I wanted also, want to say something?
Oh, just that we'll also try to define better guidelines for how to fill in the crop dictionary.
Mm-hmm. So on the other hand, they might already be using some kind of a vocabulary to annotate their germplasm as well.
Yes, but yeah.
Right? So is it possible to get a list of traits that they have done, like nursery evaluations or anything, to their germplasm repository? And is it compatible with the trait dictionaries that you are creating in some sense? Yeah. And what is the overlap, and try to see how quickly we can enrich. I believe means there are two data sets. One is their germplasm repository, and another one is some kind of a GWAS or ongoing breeding experiments that they are doing, including the Tritici CAPS. They are part of the Tritici CAPS and maize CAPS programs, I guess. So if that's true, then how we can quickly work with them to get those top priority traits in first, and then start building in the rest of the stuff.
So just for the GenBanks, we will discuss with Kate and Rosemary. Mm-hmm. But we won't have any opportunity to discuss directly with the GenBank staff, because they are having a meeting outside Mexico, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But Rosemary and Kate are on our list of people to discuss with, so we can discuss with them. But what you should know probably is that CIMIT is implementing for the GenBank Green Global, which is the USDA system. And for the breeding data, they are now at the moment in testing the breeding management system. So they are the work of Rosemary and Kate is to harmonize the metadata they are using for all those data.
So is it part of the Green Global, right?
Yeah, they have both systems. In Green Global, they started to deploy it since 2 years in CIMIT. So I think it's quite advanced. And the breeding management system started this year. And so they are trying to deploy, test, adjust the trait dictionaries according to what their needs. So it's work in progress to match what we have on our crop ontology and what they really use, in fact, for annotation.
So is the portal or the infrastructure built, designed by the USDA folks, right?
The Green Global, yes. I know that you, just as a side information, you will be in the meeting with Cheryl Porter in USDA on the 11th. In fact, I was invited to that workshop, but I cannot go because Cheryl has been discussing with me and Meda since a long time collaboration for the AgMIT variables. So you could also mention that you will be probably people representing Green Global there, I suppose.
In that. So Cheryl Porter is the Green Global person?
No, she's AgMIT person.
Okay.
But I think she was key in organizing the 3-day or 4-day workshop in Washington.
So who is the lead developer on Green Global?
So the PI is Peter Bretting in USDA.
Yeah.
And the developer is his name. It's Peter as well. Just his name just escaped.
Were you part of it too?
At the beginning, I was not part of it. It was one of my colleagues. But what BioVersity did was to test it in national GenBank in developing countries, while USDA was developing it for US.
Okay. Yeah.
So they have been what they have been loaded up to now are more descriptors they were using in green.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that now that Green Global is being tested and deployed largely in USDA ARS GenBanks, would be interesting to discuss if what we have done with the ontologies could be of interest to link to Green Global as well.
Okay. Yeah, I'll try my best.
Yeah, I know I'm giving you some ammunition for the discussion there. Okay, so these are the next. So just for you to know that for the DeepSeek initiative, so I've been elected in the steering committee, which is great. And one of the main, probably you have seen the report, but one of the main topic that came out the survey for DeepSeek to focus on is the information data and data management and all the standards related to that. When they got the response of the survey, this was the top priority in the eyes of DeepSeek members.
Mm.
So I think it's an entry point for Planteum as well.
Yeah, yeah, and Ruth Pastor would be there in that meeting as well, I believe.
Yeah, she will be. Mm-hmm. So this is where we can make some promotion of Planteum. Planteum is already under the umbrella of DeepSeek, more or less, because Laurel made the presentation, but we can make sure also that it's considered while developing the work plan.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. That's great that you're on the steering committee. Congratulations.
Yeah, thank you, Laurel. And the steering committee is there to give some advice on the priority topics for the annual work plan. So I can push
for you. Good to have you in there. Yeah. Looks like Chris is on the call. Hi, Chris.
Ah, hey, Chris.
Hi, Chris?
Hello. Yeah. Sorry, I'm late.
I can just see your forehead. So there you are.
Okay, yeah.
We can see your glasses. Ah. Okay, so on our side, I think that's me.
So, your keyboard is very loud. Okay, so I'm going to go back to sharing my screen here. So I've got some notes on the agenda here. There we go. I think you can all see it now. Yes. Okay, so updates from OSU. We are interviewing curators starting this week. So we have some good candidates. I have a few other little updates further on down, but that's kind of the main thing that's going on here. There's a lot of work going on the different ontologies here.
So the curator position, sorry if I'm a bit behind, tell me a bit more about exactly what this is, ontology and annotation, or?
This is only ontology. Annotation is not there yet, kind of thing.
Okay.
We'll bring the annotations as we move along.
Okay. If you want to throw some resumes out my way, I'd be happy to look at them.
Right.
So.
Oh, and Chris, in the meantime, you may want to take a look at the software developer things that you and Justin are looking at, right?
There might be. Yeah, last call you said there was a new candidate. I didn't see a resume for them, though.
I think there were a few more candidates that are about to apply, or they have already applied. Kind of.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So, do you guys have a timeline for the software developer when you're going to start interviewing for them, Pankaj, or?
Sorry?
You have a timeline for when?
Software developer, I think after this round, the curator positions interview happens until next week. And a week following, I think we should start getting ready to look for, the second week of May, we should start looking at the software developers and start inviting them for interviews.
Great. Yeah.
Okay. Did you want me to encourage that person, Kevin, to apply? I don't even know if he is interested in moving.
Yes. To... Yes. Yes. Please.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We can't interview until that person applies. Actually, kind of thing.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Okay. Any other questions about that?
No, I'm fine.
Okay. So the next thing that I want to kind of bring to people's attention is we're making some progress on getting things set up at GitHub. And I have, can you all see the screen here? I will open the GitHub window so we can look at it. I don't have it open. So we decided to do a couple of things. First of all, we had a couple of meetings with Chris, Justin, and I, and we had thought about making just two repositories on GitHub, one for the reference ontologies, which is sort of what this is sitting here, and one for your application specific ontologies. But when we were working with this, it doesn't seem like that model is really going to be very workable, because each of these... I'm sorry, Pankaj, that's really...
Sorry, I can mute myself.
Let me mute it. If you need to talk, you can just unmute yourself. it doesn't seem like that model is really going to work very well. So the reason why we don't have the trait ontology and the plant ontology up here yet is we made a decision amongst the members of the ontology group here that we needed to import the history from the SVN. And because these ontologies have been on the SVN for a long time and there's a great deal of history, it's turning out to be a little bit complicated. So I was hoping that Justin Elster might be able to join us towards the end of the call. He usually gets in at 9. And he may be able to give us an update on where he's at. We decided to transfer just the trait ontology to start with its history from the SVN, and start working on that and see how it goes. But because of the holdup with that, and also because of the issues that Leo's been having with the accessing the SVN, I decided to go ahead and I put the four ontologies, the CO ontologies, up here as separate repositories. And these each have the OBO file in them.
Okay.
So, and this is just the OBO file that's on the Crop Ontology website. So it probably isn't your current working version.
No,
but I'd like to see you, especially Leo, if you could, you know, try working with this and see if this, and then we can just get rid of the SVN version since that wasn't really working for you.
Okay.
Start using this. And each of these repositories has an issue tracker. And there's a space where we could create a wiki for each one. And the way it's set up as individual repositories, each one of these we can specify different developers for. So that was one of the issues of having everything in one big bucket, is that you don't, at least from what Justin and Chris had told me, we can't specify the different files to have different developer permissions. So I would really encourage you to, and you're welcome, Leo, to go in and create other ones if you're working on it and start using it as a version control system.
Can I ask a question, Laura?
Sure, absolutely.
Shall we just upload the OBO version of our species threat list, or can we upload the threat dictionary version?
I think it would be great if you could upload the trait dictionary version, because that's kind of your working copy. But it would have to be saved, I think, as a CSV file. And Chris, correct me if I'm wrong on that. I know for our SVN, the Excel version wouldn't work. But
No, you don't want to be checking the Excel version.
So if you can save it as a CSV file? Or
can you just remind me what the trait dictionary is in comparison to the OBO file?
Maybe
is an Excel file we share with the breeders, and it is following a specific template that enables anyone to upload the Excel file online and get out from that a very simple hierarchical list of threats with simplified semantics. And normally our ontology stores that in SCOS, but it's convertible into OBO.
So, all right. So the OBO is always derived in your case?
In some cases, yes. Some curators are still maintaining their OBO file.
I see. But once... Okay, so... Yeah. So you never actually go in and kind of like change the ontology with an ontology editing tool like OBO Edit, or change the OBO file. It's always derived. Okay.
Locally, yes. Some cassava, those you have here are direct obofies that are maintained by the curators directly.
I think what she's saying, Chris, is that some of them are edited in the obofile.
I see.
Some are not.
Not all.
Like, correct me if I'm wrong, probably the maize rosemary was working in obo, right?
Yeah, all what you have has been provided in obo. Rice, maize, wheat, and cassava.
Okay, right.
Right. The rest of them are trait dictionary files. Mm. The ones that are on your site. There, I got your site. Exactly. Yeah.
Laurel?
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, okay, I will start using the GitHub for the versioning of the trait dictionaries. But just to make clear of how often I will put the new versions on, I think I should put an updated version on the GitHub each time there is a new version updated on the Crop Ontology website, because I'm not going to use it constantly, because as I said, that's not the workflow that we use when developing the crop dictionaries. We use the Excel file a lot, and we use color codes with the crop curators, because they would not want to use GitHub or
right. I wouldn't think that the readers would be using it. Okay. Leo, could you show us an example of one of your trait dictionary files? I think that might help everyone to understand. I was just looking on the Crop Ontology website, but I thought there was an example here. But
yeah, but I don't know why it doesn't download PIOPS. I have a problem.
Or if you take...
Is there a place I can go on here to show people what we're talking about?
Sinon, du Dropbox. Parce que là, je sais pas ce que... Tu vois, c'était sous Mac, hein, je sais pas quand tu avais... Yeah, sorry, I'm speaking French. It's just because I'm using your Mac.
That's fine, no problem. Maybe in the maze.
We share our screen and we can show you.
Yeah, maybe I need to unshare mine. Working. Here, I'll stop sharing mine.
Okay, wait.
This one.
Okay. So, I will be sharing my screen now.
It's down at the bottom of the video picture.
Sorry, I was on Skype. Zoom. I made a mistake.
It doesn't work very well to do it on Skype.
Yeah, I was going back to Skype. Share screen. Okay, let's do that. And
okay.
Here
we are.
I go on the Dropbox. Okay, so we have all that. And which one? Never mind. Wait, we have the icon on there. Okay. Let's check one. Anyone? Okay. And,
so that's the trait template. It has default columns.
I will put that 100.
Yeah.
Maybe even bigger. I don't know why.
It's
like that. So we have, this is the trait dictionary template. And everybody wants to keep Excel. I'm so sorry, but
right. That's
where they work. So here you have the description of the headers, what it means, and then you have the trait submission sheet here, and then you have the columns here, which are those that curators shouldn't touch, or breeders, describing if it's a field book trait, who has submitted it, institution, version, linguistic version, data, the classical thing, you know, the prop, and then the trait name, abbreviation, class, subclass, if any, and after the method of measurement, description, definition, and then the scale of measurement with all the, so if it's a categorical, you will have the categories listed as well with their meaning. And anything that is necessary to add in the eyes of the curator will go at the end. So here you have the X5 to other ontologies that can be stored manually there if necessary.
So does the submitter actually add those IDs, or is that something a curator does after the fact?
Yeah, the X5, yes. And so what we do is that on our site, we have this upload function on Crop Ontology, and then the system will read the Excel file from left to right, mm-hmm. and creates the online display you have seen. But this is the way they like to work, for certainly at the level of the breeders, I mean.
So is this one Excel file shared amongst multiple breeders, or?
Yeah.
And it,
yeah, how is it gonna manage? They share it. So some of the most techie are using Google Drive in certain cases, but the less techie, they just share that file by mail and they discuss it when they meet, when they have breeders meeting. And one person is in charge to compile the feedback.
And these are stored as a shared file in Dropbox. Is that how you're managing that?
We have on Dropbox. We have it on the IBP, the breeding IBP website per crop. On the IBP, each crop has a page describing all the resources available, and then the trade dictionary is available, plus a link to the ontology.
And then this file is also in taken up by the BMS, right?
Yeah, they use that file to create the field book list in the BMS databases.
Yeah. And Elizabeth, so this is the situation for the ones who are, is everybody using the trait template file, or I'm still a bit confused about the difference between like the ontologies that Rosemary was working on in OBO.
Yeah, OBO has never worked for the BMS at that time, because in fact there were several phases in our project. We started with a widget, but when it came that the breeding management system needed a way to download lists that would be uploaded easily in a database and then a field book, they asked us to develop trade dictionaries and not OBO files, because this was not the format was not for matching what they were expecting for the field book. Now, since the BMS has adopted Shadow as a database for phenotyping data, so this since 2 years only, so I think that now they could upload an OBO file more easily, knowing that the Shadow database is not an ontology-based database, it's an ontology-aware database only. So they could now better access all or OBO, I suppose, file than before. So that's why Rosemary, IITA, they have been maintaining in parallel the trade dictionary for the needs of the field book, and also in parallel a OBO file for any use by a Shadow database. That's how they decided to do. So, but not all the curators are really using an OBO edit.
Right. And so in the case such as in Rosemary's case, with the maize or the wheat, she was actually maintaining them in parallel, maintaining both of them.
Yeah, because Rosemary was at the very beginning of the project. She has been trained by Pankaj, I think. So she was aware about all the tools and what is an ontology and everything. So she trained the curator at IITA for Cassava. So that's why Cassava is using also OBOEDIT, and we train some colleagues from other centers. But after the team changed, and some of the curators that didn't want to embark into OBOEDIT, and also because it is a local tool, and at a certain point it appears not being maintained anymore. So people were a bit concerned to use a tool that seems to not be maintained with no lively update and things like that. So they said, okay, let's go back to Excel files, because this is what scientists can understand, and we upload on your site, and we give up with OBOEDIT. That's how it happened.
Yeah. So.
But OBOEDIT is not maintained, isn't it?
We haven't made a release for a while now, no, because most people are switching to either doing Protégé 100% or some kind of mixture of OBOEDIT and Protégé.
Yeah, so we never go to Protégé, because when the decision was done to give up with OBOEDIT at that time, Protégé was still very complicated, and it seemed that the latest version is more accessible.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's still quite complicated for doing certain kinds of things. But, yeah.
It certainly wouldn't be something that you would want to ask your readers to deal with.
No.
So.
But some of the curators may be interested to access Protégé, those who are more interested by developing the ontology further.
Yeah.
But not
all. There is Web Protégé now, which is not advanced as much as I would like. It lacks a lot of features for working with multiple ontologies at the same time. But I guess I would prefer it to kind of excel in Google Docs in some way. So that might be something to look at in the future.
Yeah. So are there, in terms of this spreadsheet, it's really basically just a number of columns. Is there things like macros in it and?
Nothing.
No.
The most simple as possible, because even that sometimes is modified.
Right.
That's why we don't like Excel when you work with databases, because it's not cannot be locked, really.
Right.
That's what scientists like. So we made the trade-off here. But we have to check that they never move a colon.
But at the same time, it's a simple Excel file, and it can easily be converted into CSV.
Exactly.
That's what I was kind of wondering. Yeah, and Elizabeth and Leo, so... where in here would you be putting the mappings or the XRefs to the TO?
On the last column, that's not compulsory.
Not yet.
Not yet, but not at the level of the centers.
For example, the maze ontology that has them in there, where would they be put? This is the column here, column AQ?
Yeah. It's the last column stores the XREF when they have it. But otherwise, if you take mice or wheat, Rosemary has been doing the XREF for each term she could find.
Right.
As a new URL.
But she's putting those in this format, not in the OBO format, or both.
Both. No, OBO, you will find them.
Right. I see it in the OBO file, but... So this file that we're looking at is lentil? Okay, lentil. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay.
So do each of the traits have their own IDs? So is this XREF a cross-reference to something else, or is this its own ID? Can you maybe explain the ID system? So you have CO and then a number. Is the number...
At the inception of the project, so long time ago, they decided to give a crop code.
Mm-hmm.
So CO is crop ontology _, and you select the code of the crop you upload the ontology for. So 338 is lentil. And then when you upload, the system will allocate a sequential number. Each time he encounters a concept, he will increase.
Oh, so that gets injected into the Excel sheet.
You can upload an Excel file without any CO.
Okay.
But when you upload it, you have to tell the system that you are uploading for CO338. So the system knows it's lentil. And then it will start, while uploading, allocating sequential identifiers. And then when you download from our site, you will have the thread dictionary with the identifiers back.
Okay, and then you download the Excel file back from the system again, and it's got the IDs injected into it.
Exactly, you can do
it. This one here, it's only got IDs for some. Is this the primary ID here in the XREF?
We are in the XREF, and there was not enough.
No, but I think we didn't take the nice file, because that's a modified file.
It's an old one. Anyway, I click on one, but normally you can put the identifier as well.
There, here they are.
Here you have the colon for method ID. So once this one has been uploaded, you can download and this colon will be filled in.
Mm-hmm. Method ID.
Your database that's assigning those numbers. Okay.
Yeah.
Or your platform.
It's the database.
Yeah.
As the open.
So,
That's why. Right.
So, and if you go towards the, show me the left hand side columns. Apart from ID, is the ID thing resolved now?
Mm-hmm.
Right. So in the abbreviated name, is there a consensus on how to create these abbreviations?
Yes. Most of the breeders, at least the groups who have suggested those abbreviations, agree. Of course, you may have a group in Asia using another type of abbreviation, but this is the most commonly used abbreviation for the traits. And knowing that most of the breeders, when they capture the data in the field, they use the abbreviation and not the viable name at all, because most of them, they know the abbreviation by heart.
That is true, but I think I created something for in the trait ontology files. Actually, have some Grameen QTL abbreviation as well. Right. This is the tricky part over here, and I agree. They want to have some kind of a small symbol, but if you look at cotyledon color and cold tolerance, both of them start with CT, and you don't know if you're looking at this. If you're looking only at the abbreviation, you don't know whether C is for cotyledon or is for canopy or cold. Okay, yeah, it's very creepy at that point of time. I think you need, instead of, I would suggest that if you're doing something like that, we should use a little bit bigger, have at least three to six or even more, even longer abbreviations to make sure that people understand what that symbol means, actually.
Yeah, we discussed that, and breeders, they are very conservative on the abbreviations, unfortunately, particularly it is if it has been used in the past in several evaluation trials, because they have data stored with the abbreviation and not with the viable name. That's the thing. But I agree that sometimes the abbreviations is very cryptic. But
so there might be a possibility that we may be able to store them if you're doing it as an on the ontology, saying that abbreviated name or whatever legacy style legacy or a suggested abbreviation, something like that.
Yeah.
Right. So we might create something a little bit better, but continue to have the legacy one in it so that you can still.
Yeah, but you will have to discuss that with the breeders. That's the main point, because they are the one using that. Right. And they are very, very conservative.
I don't see it as a big problem because, I mean, we wouldn't be using these. These are really just for the breeders. And as long as the breeders know what they are.
People start the system.
There was a problem, actually, when we were doing the QTLs for rice, maize, wheat, and everything. That's the time when we created the trait ontology in Grameen. Everybody else creates a QTL symbol, right? And we were all using the same trait name, but the idea was on the display maps, what does it show, so that even before the people can go and look at the details, it should be intuitive enough for them to tell or think about it, what that kind of means.
Right.
You can have a mouse hover over to tell you the real name of it, but I think breeders and geneticists want to see some kind of a symbols or things, trait names or QTLs on the maps. And if we came up with an acronym system which was consistent and worked across the species, and if you see the similar symbol from maize and wheat and rice, you knew exactly what you're looking at, even without going into the details. So in some ways it is beneficial. We can have a suggested abbreviated name and then anything else that the user uses, kind of things.
Yeah, I see. I was just looking at the OBO file for the maize ontology, and I see that they're entered as synonyms.
Yes.
So.
Yeah, we created that.
The confusion comes when you go outside of the individual ontology, and you're like Pankaj said, when you're looking at more than one crop, for example, you may. The example I'm just looking at on the website is 100 kernel weight, and they may not be measured exactly the same way, but it may have the same abbreviation.
Yes.
Right.
It's a cheeky question. What is a lentil? I know what is a lentil is, but how do the people define what is a lentil?
What do you mean?
And the column number crop, the column number 2 that we are seeing here, what is a lentil? Is this a split pea kind of thing? Is a lentil?
You know, Pankaj, I was thinking the same thing.
Hi, Dan.
There's two kinds of things that one could do there. Actually, there's more than one kind of thing with this. One thing is, of course, to at least synonymize those names with the Latin binomials.
Mm-hmm.
And the other would be, I think, I'm not sure about lentils, but there's cultivars. And so probably if it's different cultivars for these that have been looked at for these properties, one would want to know that.
Yeah.
But if I agree. And I think, Dennis, what we are looking here is all of these lentils are nothing but legumes. Okay.
Yeah, I think so too. But but lentil is a particular species. It's not a split pea, for example, which you can buy dried.
No. There are lots and lots of them, especially. So, is chickpea considered as a lentil? I doubt it.
No.
Is yellow split pea considered as a lentil? Yes, probably. Mung bean is a lentil. There are other lentils called urad in South India, there are a lot of them. Pigeon pea is another one. Cajanus cajun is another one. So there are lots and lots of kinds of lentils, and they are in the market. They are sold as whole grain as well as split. So yeah. At what time do you call it as a lentil? So I think what you should be looking at is something which is legume specific, and lentils are part of that legume.
Is there a field to capture?
What I'm getting at a little bit, Pankaj, is exactly what you're saying. So you might want to know which one of those that these entries refer to, right?
Yes. Means if it is generic enough to cover all the legumes that create lentil grain that is sold in the market, then including from soybean, Cajanus cajun, Physiolus vulgaris, everything falls under the and even mungo, what it's called, mung bean. It's all, everything is lentil at that point of time.
Pankaj, I just checked the poster from Icarda, and what they call lentil is lens culinaris.
Okay.
So there is the focus of Icarda is this one.
And Elizabeth, is there a column to capture the cultivar or the strain?
This is what they are referring to as a species, particular species.
Well, you can add columns. You had those at the end. You have a block at the end where you said you could add.
I would actually have crop as an NCBI taxon ID or something like that.
But what does cultivar mean? Does it mean that there would be some trait, method, and sketch that would be specific to a cultivar?
Well, I'm just wondering.
I think that's possible. My point is that there are traits here that are, we might say, generic, but then there may be some traits that are associated only with certain cultivars or species, and that would be very good to know, right? Because that could have something in the genome that you're very interested in. And it's only there.
So I think what Dennis is probably coming across is that, let's say if it is for all the legumes, and there is another one, and the trait is called canopy width. So no matter whether you are in the soybean or a Physiolus or Cajanus cajun, you would be looking at canopy width as it is for any legumes. But it's possible that in this particular genus that we are looking at, you have a genus wide or a particular genus wide evaluation of that canopy width in Cajanus is a little different than in Physiolus versus in whatever it is, lentil lens something. So it may be a different method in for all of them. So if the lentil folks are already developing this, this is already applicable to lots of other people who are doing legumes.
So do you suggest that we reinitiate the small prototype we did with Laurel about compiling the threads we have and start to make a draft legume ontology to make an intermediate level?
I believe so, and you can always start with the, what this guy, Rex Nelson, has already done it for soybeans. You have a template already working for him. He's done it for soybean and Medicago probably. So it's as much of it is already there. And all you need to do is figure out how these things fit into that, or if you can combine and enrich those things.
Yeah. Well, we Harold and I worked last year on harmonizing the legume group.
Yeah.
So that work is you know, kind of underway. I'm not sure if we're talking about doing the same thing. If we're both talking about the same thing there. So. But you know, I think we don't want to get too hung up on nitpicking your trait dictionary. This is working for you, and I think Pankaj's point is, and Dennis's point is really important, that you want to make sure that when people say lentil, they know we're all talking about the same thing, and that when we're talking about the abbreviations, that we know what we're talking about.
So, but Pankaj makes this very good point too, that you may only want to know that this thing is across all legumes. Right. Wasn't that part of your point?
Right. Yeah. Well, I think that harmonization is a different step, and that's definitely an important thing that we want to look at as we move forward.
That's what I meant. It's something we have to do it immediately, but I just meant it's something to think about, you know, in future planning and thinking.
And the idea, I think, as we move forward is each of these trait dictionaries or vocabularies or ontologies, whichever the case may be, will be mapped back to the reference trait ontology. And so through the reference trait ontology, we can ask those kinds of questions. That's the goal. You know, we can say for the trait of plant height, and then we can look at the data from all these different species that are linked through plant height. So, you know, we don't want to disrupt too much what you're doing with your breeders, of course. My interest in looking at the trait dictionary together was to kind of, for all of us to get a feel with what your workflow currently is and how we can, you know, work with that and so on. So
I think this is a good start. So Chris and everybody, I don't know if Chris is there or not.
Take another call. He's
but it's good to have at least one more column in this, which is a trait ontology ID, two columns, trait ontology ID and the trait name.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Trait ontology name in this column.
Maybe the trait ontology ID was in the cross reference.
No, cross reference. I mean, you can call it as a cross reference. You can put it there, but cross reference has only one column here, which is not possible. I would just say add trait ontology while Leo is already working on it.
Right.
At least he can all straight away go ahead and add the ID and the name. We can put it into cross-reference or whatever, but at least in this spreadsheet, there is a term. And if it is not there, then we know that this needs to be integrated in the trait ontology reference.
So the assumption here is that the people maintaining the spreadsheet are in charge of cross-referencing, because the other way to do it is what we do in Uberon, cross-reference down to the species specific. So in this model, the central plantiome trait ontology, we'd have cross-references pointing down to the original crop ontology IDs.
Mm-hmm.
That shifts the responsibility of where the primary version of those cross references belong.
I think the important thing is, Chris, is they're the experts in their crops.
Yep.
I'm not, and whoever we get working on this project is not.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard for us to look at their traits and say exactly, you know, maybe we should be kind of a joint thing, but they could definitely put it in from their end, I think.
Yeah, I think whoever is curating or maintaining this thing, we should encourage them to provide the best possible trait ontology term that they can.
Mm-hmm.
And we can pick it up whether it is an exact one or is it a little different. But if there is no mapping, that gives us an idea as well that there needs to be, we need to add an instance on it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of why we picked the three or four crops as the initial test ones, to kind of start working with the curators on those and kind of move forward there. So I think we can explore kind of how we can interface between, you know, your use of the trait template with your breeders and possibly one of the ontology editing tools for the curator, and then to interface with the plantiome ontologies.
Right. So can I take a look at this row which says Fusarium wilt resistant resistance, or even from the top, Brookid resistance too? Brookid. Brookid, I don't know, probably it is some kind of a pathogen.
It's an insect. It's a weevil, yeah.
Do you call insect as a pathogen or not? I have no idea.
It's a pathogen, yeah.
Yeah, so is there information about that pathogen taxon in this file? Because Lal or somebody who is developing the disease ontology, actually they would need the name of the pathogens, their Latin names or binomial names, to add to those taxons and make sure there is a reference to that. And sometimes some of these diseases are actually, they don't know exactly if it is only one pathogen or multiple pathogens.
It can be multiple pathogens for sure.
I think this case it's these weevils, and I'm not sure, but what resistance to them has been part of plant breeding, you know, historically.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're snout weevils is what they are.
Right. But we want to have that weevil instance, binomial instance in the taxon ontology and have it and define it correctly. It will help the people who are doing, or when Leo or other folks who do the plant disease ontologies, they make sure that there is an instance and we have the full information.
Yeah, I agree with you.
Yeah, definitely.
And there's some of these things that are that way, right? There's some of the fungal things. For example, right. The anthracnose is probably a particular fungus known in other plants also, but different species of that fungus.
So, Elizabeth, what we're trying, I think, here is that I think this is an excellent start over here, but probably the breeders don't want to go back and forth again and again and engage them. I think this is one time when they come to this thing, and they are, if they are able to provide all the pieces of information at one instance, then we have everything. If we do really need to go back, then it's one or two more discussions and we have everything. But otherwise, if we don't have that primary information, then it is a lot of back and forth kind of things. Does that make sense?
Can I summarize what you were suggesting? So I'm sure I understand the effort to be done on this. Is that when you have for the crop, you would add a colon for the taxonomy name, Latin binomial name. That's it. Make sure we are mentioning the proper species.
Right.
Then you would add for the pathogens, pests, also the taxonomical name as far as we can get it, the binomial name. So you would add the colon as well for that. Mm-hmm. And then for the threat itself, we should add a colon for the threat ontology identifier.
And the name.
When there is known, it means that we couldn't find one, so we need help, or it doesn't exist, or we have. And then for the pathogen, do we have to indicate anything for the plant disease ontology? Or
no, not right now. I think it will come at some point. But what I would like to see, especially for these pathogen, resistance, how do they measure? I think there is some information about how they measure in terms of looking at spots or burn marks or something like that, or necrosis. But there might, if there is a column where they can write anything free text about the details about that trait that they're evaluating, that would be fantastic.
Usually what they do is the method for observing or measuring it in the field, and for further information, they give a bibliographic reference.
Yeah, so for example, you have describe how they measured it, right?
Yeah, most of the time it's, and in some cases it can be only an observation, it depends, because this is for being used in the field.
So
it's difficult to have the full, sometimes you have to bring back samples in the lab, so...
Right.
Right. For example, the first one, anthracnose resistance. I think, can we take a look at the, what is the description?
Okay, let's see. I took perhaps the less advanced. Yeah, no. Wait. I want just to hide. This is probably the last advanced trade dictionary. Until I didn't take one, but anyway, let's see.
Yeah, click on that quantification of symptoms development in.
It's not yet there.
No, cell below it. Yes.
Oh, in leaves and stem.
So I want to see quantification of symptoms development in leaves and stem. But what is the symptom?
And then, it's a categorical scale.
Leaf lesions.
No lesions.
So it's a leaf lesions.
Small, superficial lesions. It's about lesions.
Right. Yeah. So what we are actually looking at, the lesion size or number of lesions.
Yeah.
So it could be leaf lesions.
On the scale 1 to 9.
Right. So here's what I'm coming up, because even though the trait was a more generic one, was for resistance, but the actual trait that was measured was leaf lesions or root lesions or whatever it is, or leaf lesion size or leaf lesion numbers. Okay. So somewhere we need to capture that information, because those are the individual instances of trait that are scored to evaluate or a manifestation of a disease, right? Resistance was recorded or observed based on the evaluation of lesion size or a number of lesions. So those are in two different, it's an interpretation
of those
cumulative traits,
right?
Yeah. So I think you want to score these things, and then you come back and say, because of the scoring pattern, I have this disease. It's an interpretation. So
then you can do additional lab.
Right. So you need to have all three instances of whatever anthracnose resistance is a trait. You want to have lesion size as a trait. You want to have lesion number as a trait. And then you would have leaf sheath lesions or leaf lamina lesions or something like that. Those are all instances of those. Once we have all these instances, then and when you go to the disease ontologies or something like that, or a stress ontology, we would be able to put all these things together and say, if you see leaf lesions and stem lesions, they are in a particular crop, then you're very likely to have this disease, right? So you build the relationships, but you need to have all those individual traits in it.
Okay, so you would suggest to extract from the categorical scale we have, which is for the use in the field, additional traits.
Yeah, so what would happen is, you would have, in this case, what is happening here is a primary trait and a secondary trait. So primary trait you're evaluating is an interpretive trait, that is anthracnose resistance, but the secondary traits you evaluated was lesion size and lesion numbers, or I don't know what that is. So you have several deep lesions. I don't know what is a deep lesion. So you might have to go back and ask them. So those become your secondary traits. So I would say you repeat the rows for anthracnose resistance, and then add the second, there should be columns for secondary traits in that somewhere. Do you see what I'm trying to say?
Yeah. It's just that I'm evaluating the work behind.
Yeah. It's a lot of work actually.
Yeah, when you touch the disease, it starts to be very complicated, I realized.
It will come for drought resistance too, because nobody records for drought resistance directly.
No, drought resistance is a confusion.
Drought resistance is also an interpretive trait based on cumulative effect of several other traits like leaf rolling, deep root survival of the plant, and leaf color, photosynthesis rate, and lots of other things. Yeah. Based on that, if you think that the plant is drought resistant or susceptible. So there is a first order traits that you see, and then the second order or third order traits that you would. So it's a little complicated here, but I believe we should be able to work it out on that.
We may need some. We may need to define a process for doing that altogether.
Right.
Because how do we? Because we cannot touch our trait dictionaries, but we can have an intermediate product where we start to extract those additional traits.
Right. So I would say that just take like these three or four. Let's start with only the biotic stress traits. Just a set of those. And see how you can reconfigure it as a first order, second order, third order traits and that. And then because all these things that you're recording, your scale number one, scale number two, scale number three, or class four, class five, class six, these are all second order traits that you're looking at.
I take notes of that. So perhaps I may need some priority setting for what to do first. Is once we have a stable trait dictionary, is to add the binomial names that link to trait ontology, and then as a second step, try to extract the additional secondary traits from the categorical scales.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we can talk about this some more as you kind of move ahead and people join your project there.
Yeah, because we may involve some of the curators who are interested to help with that kind
of... Sure. And you know, I would suggest getting this, if you can get it up in a form where we can share it and then we can look at it as you're moving along, it'd be great. It's kind of the idea of having the GitHub. So I think we need to kind of wrap up here. We're about at the end of the hour. I know it's pretty late there.
That's fine.
Do you want me to take the screen back? Is there any other comments on the trait dictionaries, anyone? I think this is a great discussion, and it's really helpful for us to see it. And
One thing I think that is showing up here is a long time ago, Michael Ashburner and I worked on chemical ontology, and we used to give the prefix CO. Although that ontology is retired now, it's been taken over by Chevy. But maybe I could suggest that all these CO things should be prefixed with CGIAR so that there is some ownership on that.
I was requested to remove CGIAR, so that may need to be a discussion with our community, because in the past it was CGIAR and they asked us to remove it.
Oh, okay.
Because there was more than CGIAR contributing, there was external partners. So.
Okay, well, that's the name I used on the GitHub, but we can certainly change that if you have something you'd rather.
Yeah, I would
biodiversity.
We had to remove that. So.
Yeah.
So this is something which you may want to consider that because here is what we're looking at is who is developing it. In some sense, there should be an umbrella organization. On top, something like that, but
it's not the same of being the implementing agency, let's call it like that, which is the CGIAR, and have the each product named after CGIAR, while it's an effort of several institutions. You can see on our site that each ontology has a list of partners and several logos, which are not all CGIAR centers. So that's my. That was why we were asked to remove. But we could put IBP or we could put something less. I need to see with the consortium office and the IBP what would be preferable.
Okay. All
right. And whoever is the author and the institution or their affiliation, I think should show up on the comments field on the very top of the ontology file or something like that.
I think it's on the left-hand side.
I think there should be somewhere who's the affiliation of the curator who is curating.
You have some short one on the. In this case, the lentil has been put it by Icarda, but if you take soybean, or you have several institutions, and we have that visibility on our website as well.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. Well, it's really interesting. Lots of good information there.
Thank you.
Thank you for sharing that with us. So okay. I think I'm going to take the screen back here.
I need to stop. I found it finally. I was looking where it was because it was.
I think this is where I want to be. So one thing I wanted to talk about while we're here is when we can meet again. I was going to show you a little bit about the updates on Amigo 2, but I don't think we really have time for that today.
Well, what? Right.
Elizabeth, we're trying to have these ontology meetings every 2 weeks. So is the 26th? No, what is the 28th of April? So does the 12th work?
Not the 12th for me.
So I think you're traveling again.
In the meantime, even if Marie-Angélique is not yet completely up to speed, she can attend as well because she will have started by that time.
The next all-hands meeting is planned for May 7th.
We will be in both in CIMIT.
Okay.
And I don't know what time slot it is.
CIMIT would be probably our time.
There are actually 1 hour.
7:30 or 8:30. I think they're 1 hour ahead.
Yeah, they're on mountain time.
Just 1 hour ahead from you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So actually if you have time to talk with us while you're there, that would be great.
On the 7th, I have a meeting starting very early on Skype as well already. I'm sorry. I need to have a meeting on Skype. That's unfortunate. So no, not for the 7th.
I know your schedule is complicated. Well, maybe we should take this offline and we can discuss this after the call.
I'm trying to put in your shared agenda my travels.
Right.
As I can, but I may have forgotten.
And I scheduled the meeting for the 7th because I thought that one was open.
No, it's... I think I put it in the shared agenda, I hope.
I don't see anything on the Plantium calendar about the meeting.
I missed that one
next week. So.
Because frankly, on my agenda, I have a travel to CIMIT next week, 2 weeks after in South Africa, the week after in Italy. That's my month of May. Right. It's the terrible heavy May month.
Yeah. Well, let's try to talk in the intervening week there. Does the 12th work for you, Elizabeth? I think Pankaj, you're going to be away at the
meeting in DC.
But I think if we can get this on the calendar, I have it on the calendar right now for the 12th. So at least I can talk with Leo and
Marie will be on board now. By that time.
Yeah.
You can keep it and. My driver must be at the door.
Okay, I know it's
I'm so sorry.
Okay, I think we need to wrap up then. Okay.
Dennis, since Dennis is here, can we ask him about his curator, Dennis? What's the status?
Oh, I'm interviewing people.
Oh, wonderful.
So I'll have that cleared up pretty quick, I think.
Great. Right.
Very nice.
And I'm real hot to get started on some of this. So
We are interviewing this week and next week for the curators.
Yeah.
And Chris and other folks would be looking at looking at the software developer person.
I think Justin and we're going to set up some things about imaging.
Yes.
Regular meetings, so that'll be good too.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. You're contributing your images to that. That's wonderful. Thanks.
So, Chris, do you need anything else from us?
Not sure if he's...
I'm here. I'm still here. I think that was very informative. So we still need to come up with a plan exactly with how we're going to integrate all of these, but I have a kind of idea of how that might work now.
Everything. Right. Every time we talk and share our information, that helps a lot. So... Mm-hmm.
Thanks for making all this GitHub and things like that and taking it on from that side.
Oh, Laurel made all those, so.
All right.
Yeah, we can modify the names and...
Yeah.
I will need to go because...
Bye.
I need to go because my husband just rang me for saying he's waiting for me outside.
Thank you very much for staying so late, you guys. I appreciate it.
You're welcome. It was a very fruitful discussion.
And Elizabeth, I'm going to email you. There's a possibility I can be in Montpellier on the 1st and 2nd of July. And I know we had talked about this previously. But
There is perhaps a meeting in Rome that is being organized, but I don't have confirmation yet.
I will try
to get it this week.
The AgriVolk meeting?
Okay.
Is that the AgriVolk meeting?
I think it's something with the FAO, yes.
Yeah, I'm aware of that meeting, yes, actually. Would you be going to it?
I don't know yet, because Marie-Angélique is aware of it, because she works on the compilation, and she mentioned that to me, but she said that the dates are not completely fixed, and
I think they're going to be the 2nd and 3rd.
Okay, so it's early today anyway.
Anyway, we can talk a little bit. I'm going to, most likely, it looks like I'll be in Paris on the 29th and 30th of June.
Okay.
And I was thinking maybe I could come down and meet with Leo and Marie-Angélique and you for a couple of days and work on things together, since I'm in the country. But I'll email you some more details about it, and we can talk some more.
And I can check the agenda.
Yes. And I'm aware of the FAO meeting, because we moved the wheat data interoperability group meeting because of the FAO meeting.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so we can discuss that.
Great. You better go. Don't keep your husband waiting.
Yeah, he will be complaining. It's time to go home. Okay, bye-bye. Have a nice day.
Bye. Thanks, everyone.
Bye.